that answer to you is, remember I listed there were a lot of different kinds of contaminants. There were the volatile organics, there's the uranium, there's the cadmium, there's the high explosives, there's the perchlorate. And you can't use the same cleanup technology on all of these contaminants. So one area might have where you have, let's say, TCE. You can pump that up out of the ground and get the TCE out of the water and have the TCE then concentrated as a hazardous waste and have clean water and then put the water back.
Okay.
You can do that for some of the area where there's that uranium 238, the depleted uranium. But in other areas, it's more complicated where it's in the soil. So that's why there are different technologies in different areas. And then, of course, these areas are not all neat and tidy. Just one contaminant is here and one contaminant is here. In a bunch of the areas, there's a mix of contaminants in the soil, a mix of contaminants in the groundwater. And so it really is a complicated process that I would submit to you needs community oversight and dialogue back and forth. To make sure that the most effective solution is the one that's chosen.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to add something.
And then when should you then over?
Yeah, I wanted to add something about this whole discussion is that we have found that Tri-Valley Cares has found that the EPA and the state regulatory agencies are, for the most part, allies. With us, and we advocate to them more so. I think that I think that the people who work at the lab are also really good, trying to do the best thing. And I think it's a matter of funding. I think most of it is a matter of making sure that the money is available for them to do their jobs. It's not like they're nefarious people. The people who are doing the cleanup. I mean, everybody's been trying to do a good job.
And that's why the petition that we have is about funding the cleanup. It's not about getting cleanup or how to clean it up, even though we do monitor that. And that's why we're going to D.C. in March to talk to our representatives who determine whether or not they're going to allocate that money about doing so. And that's why it's great if we can bring, you know, so far we have about 5,000 signatures on that petition, and if we can bring those and tell our representatives, hey, people care, they really want this done, see, we have petitions, and it makes a difference. So, yeah, thanks for asking that.
I would like to know what happened to the workers that suffer from the illnesses they get from the workers that are on there, because as you have said before, most of the workers are suffering from illnesses.
I wouldn't say most of the workers are, but some workers have believe that they've been made ill by on-the-job exposure. And there's a federal program for those workers called the Energy Employee Occupational Illness Compensation Program Act. And it is as complicated as its name makes it sound. It does provide for compensation for those workers if they're able to prove beyond a certain level of causation that they were in fact exposed to something that would cause their illness. So that's where I come in to help them navigate that process to get some compensation. But you asked what happens to those workers? They get cancer and die, is what happens to those workers. Some of them, very few, get compensation.
When you say clean up, and how big clean up, put it away somewhere, where's someone?
That's another really good question, because they're related.
Where's it going?
Yeah. Peter, do you want to talk?
Well, I mean, for the most part, where we would prefer that it's destroyed, there are, you know, if there's a biological method that works, that would be the best way. But if you concentrate the solvent in a granulated activated carbon, that's going to be sent off to a waste disposal facility, or it's going to be regenerated somewhere else. And regeneration causes a whole bunch of problems. Regeneration, you take that carbon out, and you have these molecules that sorb onto it and heat it up, and it goes into the air. So you're transferring some contamination, and it's a problem that I don't know how we solve. We can't get it all on site, but we would prefer that most of the things remain on site. So for instance, building 850, which is similar to building 812, they scraped all the soil and they made a 20-foot high monolith, and they mixed it with Portland cement, and that's there. And they're going to monitor it, and they're going to keep it there. In the old days, they shoveled the stuff into pits, and as Mayor Aliyah said, the groundwater rose and washed it all out.
And stays there.
And that's not a solution.
They're trying to pull some of that groundwater out and try to clean the uranium, two-thirds, the depleted uranium and some of the solvents and stuff out of it. But a problem with tritium, the radioactive hydrogen of the hydrogen bomb, you all know H2O is water, hydrogen and oxygen. Well, when it's radioactive hydrogen, it becomes HTO, but it's still really tightly bonded with radioactive water. You can't take the tritium out. So where you have tritium in the groundwater, the best thing we can have them do is hold it in place while radioactive decay happens. But for everything else, there are ways that you can clean it up, even if it's expensive, and so we are pressing them to actually clean it up. But not by just dumping it in somebody else's community where they put it in an incinerator on a reservation or something like that. So then we try to talk about how can you keep it safe, here or in a licensed facility.
And I think your point also brings us back to how it's so necessary to stop adding to the pollution here and to really stop at the exploding activities and polluting activities at Site 300. Yes?
I'm getting it late for everybody in business, but you guys talk about firing table. Is that what the term was?
Yes.
And I see this picture of this blowing up thing. I have no idea the scale of like how big this is, but I guess detonating stuff like see the reactor of uranium-238. So if you could display the scale just real quickly. Or
there are some photographs on our site that are bigger than a house. A lot of these explosions are bigger than a house.
And so that disperses stuff over, God knows, there are like 10
miles. Some of it, a lot of it will fall locally.
And then so the idea is they're thinking it's just for this area that they want it cleaned up, but actually the plume and like the water, for example, and the air is going much farther.
The air plume would be, I can't tell you exactly how far it goes, but I know that for certain things they have tracked it and it's miles. And I know that in the environmental documents they draw a 50-mile circle around it and call that the affected area. But for the ground, the soil, and the groundwater, it's and the springs, it's easier to sort of locate it, and that's mostly what's being cleaned up.
If I remember correctly, for building H12, the area that they're finding gamma, elevated gamma detection is 33 acres. So there's a small firing table that is probably twice the size of this room. But it was open air.
Right.
And so that's what they're talking about.
so for each, yeah, for each one, you can kind of look at the fire exhibit on the map.
And of course, because they're open air on the day that they have the explosion, the wind and air movement is potentially blowing that contamination quite far at low levels. Are there any other questions?
What's the fire table for?
What's it for?
It doesn't keep anything from going in the ground, it doesn't keep anything from going in the air. What's it for?
No, it's a testing table.
Firing literally means detonation in that.
Like your heat, huh?
It literally means detonation in that case. And they've got diagnostics in the buildings by these firing tables. And so when these mock bombs that have some real materials in them, like the depleted uranium, some had tritium, and all of these toxic materials and the high explosives, when they're blown up, these machines take very fast, amazing, just the technology of it, photographs, practically millisecond by millisecond of the implosion. So if you're a weapons designer, you can, tell how your new novel nuclear weapon design is working. So that's literally, that's the main purpose of it. But of course, you're blowing this stuff all over.
Yeah, they're testing materials, they're testing all those, that's what they're, and, in the old days, they did it really carelessly. And now they're doing it much more environmentally friendly, if you can call it that. But it's never environmentally friendly. But it's
less hostile.
Well, because they only have one open air firing table left that they're using, and that's a real community success. Just a few years ago, there were four of them.
Any other questions? Yes.
Okay. Just listening to all of this, and I'm stunned. Are there any studies that are being done with the soil for the city of Tracy, like for the residents, where we're living? To see if there's already effects
that
we're living with? No.
I've asked one,
but
no.
Okay.
Who would you ask for? Who would you ask?
I've asked the city council or supervisors to take a look at it and encourage DOE to do those studies, but nothing's ever happened.
Okay, and then I'm thinking just the way the weather cycles are, if there's things exposed in a site that's currently being used, isn't that, it's more than just Tracy that's being affected, I would assume. So how far does this go? I think you said 50 miles?
50 miles is the circle that they actually draw in their own environmental impact reports and documents.
Which maybe would come in, but I'm thinking just like the water cycle. Evaporation and then
it's
carried over to the
region. Actually, when you talk about water, that is, for me, mm-hmm. that's a much more concern
right.
than the contamination in Tracy. I think that the regional water supply has been contaminated, and with a number of chemicals. Number of contaminants, and if that is allowed to just continue, then it affects people's drinking water, and that's where that's probably your the number one exposure pathway.
And the city of Tracy, or I'm not sure who does test the water, and we get something in our bill, I think once.
But do you have groundwater?
We were using 5,000 to 7,000 acres of groundwater, but now we're down to 300 because we've got another source from the San Francisco. So there's very little groundwater pumping going on in Tracy for the last probably 2 or 3 years, which is good.
Do you know, because I'm going to stop there, I know this is not Tracy, but do you know groundwater?
I don't know. The main, the The main exposure path for Stockton, this is my opinion in terms of what I've studied that I'm offering you. The main exposure path for Stockton would be accidents and stuff at the laboratory because the wind pattern blows in that direction for a lot of the year. And one of the few things that they have tracked is from the Livermore Lab main site. One of their big tritium leaks from the tritium facility in Livermore, the main site, happened when the wind was blowing to the east, and west to east is the predominant pattern, but not the only pattern. It blows every which way, different parts of the year. And at that particular time, I was told they traced tritium from that accident as far away as Fresno. So in the case, that was a big accident. So in the case of a big accident, I think that the outlying areas, that's probably your biggest risk.
Yeah, now the 50-mile radius, is that an accident, that's an accident scenario?
That's
an accident scenario.
Yes, in the environmental, well, no, actually, when they figure out the person, the population person rent, they use an environmental impact report, a CEQA document.
Yeah.
They use a 50-mile radius. I'll show you. So, but it's not limited. Stockton's within a 50-mile radius. But I'm just saying that from a big accident, it's not limited to 50 miles.
And of course, we have the California Aqueduct running through Tracy and pretty close to the site.
So if you think about the site, there was Merrill said that there was a GSA site, which was here. There was a 3-mile long plume, which they actually brought back almost entirely onto the site.
But not quite yet.
For remediation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really one of the big success stories of pump and treat. When if you hear that word, you hear that it doesn't work. Well, it actually worked here.
Yeah. We're still on them. They're not done. It's still off-site. But we were concerned because it was not just under Corral Hollow Road, but it was under the creek. And while they were saying there wasn't any cross contamination between the groundwater and the creek, if you leave it for decades, you know, that can change. Earthquake changes like that. And you've got the Elk Ravine Fault, which is active, and the Corral Hollow Fault, which is less seismically active, but could be. The last big earthquake at the main site was on the Greenville Fault that was listed as an inactive fault from the USGS map, so knocked me down. So it's really important that they do a good job. I'm sorry.
Well, we don't know how contaminated groundwater is.
We have a good idea.
You say here that groundwater in multiple places and in some it exceeds state and federal maximum contamination levels by many hundreds times. So we really don't know how contaminated it is.
No, we do. We have a good idea.
About how maximum level.
Yes, at maximum contaminant levels. So we have a good idea, a good definition of
hundreds of times.
Yes, but hundreds of times, but where there are limited drinking water wells, we want to do is make sure that it doesn't go off site and clean it up to the degree possible on site.
So building 812 is one of the places where the depleted uranium has been found at hundreds of times the maximum contaminant level, the area that Peter was talking about.
Did that answer your question? You know?
So for us to say it's hundreds of times, you have to go over
it. Hundreds of times the maximum level. How much is it really?
Well, I mean, I don't have the
If it was 22,000, how do you carry?
I can tell you that, I can tell you that.
The maximum level is what it's dangerous, isn't it?
The maximum.
So it's 100 times dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh, I was wondering how dangerous it was.
Pretty nasty. But we figured that 100 times the maximum contaminant level would tell you more than if we just said it was 22,000 and some odd picocuries per gram, because you go, what? But that is hundreds of times the maximum contaminant.
All right, I couldn't hear you, but thank you.
All right, do we have any other questions?
I got one question.
Yes.
I have a friend that works at the site, and he actually told me that there's two other facilities, not the more lab, but other companies. Have you guys ever addressed those two?
They're smaller, but yes.
There's Physics International, SRI.
Yeah, talk a little bit.
I don't know who they are. Yeah. He, that's just the guy told me. Oh, okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, they're both pretty much shut down, my knowledge. There may still be a little activity.
So any thoughts before we go? Anybody who hasn't spoken yet want to offer any thoughts, questions?
I'll hear from you.
Huh?
Hear from the lab. Do you guys have a meeting, have a lab rep here?
I am going to take back to the lab. I'm having a meeting with them the end of this month, and I'm going to take back, you know, if I have your permission, but what I've kind of understood is that Tracy would like to hear from the lab about once a year and to have an informal meeting where people can ask questions and gnaw on the issues and give your feedback directly. So I can't guarantee, but I think there's a good chance. And also, I just thought of this. Tri-Valley Cares has for our members and for the community, ask the laboratory to do community tours. We did a community tour of Site 300 about a year ago. The technical staff at Site 300, obviously I don't control them, but I can't, say that they'll say yes, but they've really, truly been helpful, and they've really, truly been open, and the managers here. And so it has to be during the day when they're working, which is hard because it's when we're working. But if people would be interested in me asking them to do a community tour, and then we'll have a sign up, and you get badged, and you go with some of the lab's cleanup people, and you go to these areas, building A12, building A50, you get to see it. For me, I understand things a whole lot better when I'm standing there looking at it. Oh, there's the Elk Ravine Fault. Oh, there's the creek. And so we'll do that if you guys want. And if you sign up on our mailing list, you'll get a newsletter that will give you an opportunity to sign up for the tour if and when we can set one up. It sounds possible, right? Yeah. So I will do that. I will commit to do that. So do sign up on the mailing list because the newsletter is free and it's a way to keep in touch. And you can also obviously just email us or call us also. But I'll do that.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
I have a question. This might sound naive, but do all countries test nuclear weapons like this? Because I thought we're supposed to move away from that. It's supposed to be all nuclear energy. I'm just curious. If it's this area that's for the whole country.
I'll let other people answer, but I'll answer partly because I've been to other countries. Many countries, the vast majority of the countries in this world have chosen not to develop nuclear weapons. For the countries that have chosen to develop nuclear weapons, every single one of them has contaminated their people in the name of saving or securing them. I have been to Russia. I have toured three different Russian nuclear weapons facilities. They are horribly contaminated. The rivers coming out of them are horribly contaminated. I've been to other countries' nuclear weapons facilities and the places where other countries test, where other countries have every country has tested their nuclear weapons on indigenous people, let me put it that way. In the United States, as you heard, we tested in Nevada on Western Shoshone land. The French tested in Polynesia on the native peoples there. I can just go through the list. So both in the areas where they tested, did the actual explosive full-scale nuclear weapons test, and in the areas where they developed the weapons, like is happening here, and they did the tests that were involved in developing, they are all contaminated in the same way.
And we do have a comprehensive test ban treaty. The United States has not ratified that treaty, but we are signatories. However, the kinds of tests that are happening at Site 300 don't fall under the auspices of that treaty. They're not large enough.
Because they're not designed.
Yeah. All right. Well, if anybody, oh yeah, Joanne.
I don't live here. I live in Livermore, but I'm concerned, of course. That's why I'm here. What kind of monitors are there, or are there monitors in place to test the air quality? Because when they blast, the predominant direction of the wind is from the west to the east. That brings it right into Tracy. Do we know how much contamination has come here?
I believe they have a beryllium monitor in Tracy. I believe there's one downtown here. There's also one over by Patterson Patch Road. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of any testing that they have for like depleted uranium and other substances, but I know they do test for beryllium.
So we really don't know how badly they've contaminated the area.
They have, in the annual environmental monitoring report, another one of these very arcane documents, you can see where the testing locations are, but both of the main site and the Site 300, I would argue they're too sparse. I would also argue that it's an imperfect system in many ways. They don't monitor for everything, and they're very sparse. And when a Department of Energy team came to the Livermore Lab main site, they found monitors that were behind buildings so that no air got to them. and I personally went to a meeting. The lab used to have meetings where they brought out the annual monitoring reports and could go to this meeting. I was at a meeting at the Livermore Lab Visitor Center when they showed the map, and this guy stood up, lived near off Patterson Pass, and said, you know, that monitor is on my property, and it's been down for 9 months. So it's not nothing, but it's not enough, is my opinion.
And they do have fence monitors around the site.
Yeah, they do.
They do have fence monitors. They do monitor the border of the site.
And they have them in Livermore, too. Remember, we saw them by the South Bay Aqueduct, but it's not sophisticated.